Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Xbox Casuals, the Xbox podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Corey Deergan. Alongside me, as always, is the man who's moving to other platforms, Josh Finney.
This is absolutely unbelievable. I can't believe you did this joke twice in one night.
It was slightly different.
It was slightly different.
Slightly. We'll say slightly.
So, a lot has happened since we last met.
Oh my gosh.
Almost a month ago. It's been several weeks.
Yeah. We were actually going to record on Monday until we found out this announcement was happening. So we delayed.
Feel like we still could have recorded on Monday and just done like a quick thing now.
Yeah. I'm going to be honest with you.
This could have been an email.
I know. That's the title of the episode. Unbelievable.
But I feel like we kind of have to recap how we got to this point.
Yeah.
Because Corey and I record a few weeks ago. Not kidding. The next day, Microsoft announces they're laying off 90 million people across Xbox, Activision, Blizzard King, and Bethesda. Shit. And Corey goes to go on vacation. And the day that Corey is literally in the air going on vacation when, and I'm gonna name names here, Xbox Era comes out and puts out a report saying, exclusive, we can confirm that Starfield is coming to PS5. And I'm like, huh, okay. And people are sending me this going, Josh, is this for real? And I'm like, you know what? I don't think they have the greatest track record. Okay, like Spectralnik or whatever his name is, I don't know how to pronounce his Twitter handle, is like right maybe like 40% of the time. So I usually just tend to ignore like the nonsense that comes out over there. And that's, you know, no offense. I've listened to the Xbox Era podcast. I think it's fine. I think they've got some decent people over there, but they are, you know, they're clearly not journalists is what I'm trying to get at here. And they'll be the first ones to tell you that, which is why I had a problem with how that was reported and how that was broken. I didn't take it seriously. I go back about my business and then my phone starts lighting up because people are sending me a Tom Warren article from The Verge. And I'm like, oh shit, if Tom's writing something, kind of have to take it seriously now. Tom goes, I don't know anything about Starfield, but I've heard that there are at least discussions happening internally about Indiana Jones coming to PlayStation 5 sometime in 2025. That's really the moment that I think set the community off, if we're being honest. The Starfield news definitely had like some of the more toxic Twitter personalities freaking out.
Shocker.
Some of whom are just like, they are like damn determined not to backtrack after today too, which makes it even funnier in my opinion. But this sets off a whole wave of controversy. And so people are freaking out. They're absolutely losing their minds. This is happening on a Sunday afternoon, by the way. Tom is breaking this story at like 1 a.m. UK time. On a Sunday night, this is happening. The next morning, I'm not even out of bed yet. I got people linking me tweets from Jeff Grubb saying that he heard there were conversations about Gears of War coming to PlayStation. That's the moment that I went, oh no, this is bigger than we thought it was. Oh no. By lunchtime, Phil Spencer is out going, hey, we hear you. We understand you. We had an announcement that we were going to do later on in the spring. We're moving it up to next week, this and that. And I need to break down for people who don't understand why they would wait like 2 weeks to do this and they would just let it fester. This is a $1 trillion company. It's a $3 trillion company, mind you. They just laid off 1,900 people. They are just getting past that. It probably took I think it was Zach Ryan, who used to work at IGN and is a global community manager for Twitch now. I think he tweeted this and he said, it probably took an entire day just to get approvals for Phil to even be able to say that they were going to do an event this week.
Yeah.
That is why it is part of the Xbox official Xbox podcast and this and that. So people had like 9 days to keep freaking out over this. Okay. Slowly last weekend, you know, more sensible voices are coming up. I mean, you had Jez was freaking out. You had Destin freaking out. Be like, oh, I think this is the end. This is the end of Xbox.
Yeah.
This is the end of it as we know it.
That's
our digital libraries are gone.
Yeah. So that's when I actually like, I saw deaths. Like, I was like, okay, Xbox era. I don't like you said, they're fine, but I don't trust them all the time. Right.
No.
Like,
no, they're a fan site. They are not a source of journalistic news.
That's what I'm saying. When they just say stuff, like, I don't trust them. I listen to them once in a while, whatever. But when I saw like people like Destin start saying stuff, which he's, you know,
Destin has at least worked for a credible organization. Yeah.
I would say that's when I messaged you when I saw him, because I was completely checked out until like, I don't know, when did I message you? Thursday, Friday, maybe?
What's
going on with Xbox?
I think it was like Sunday.
Yeah, it was something like that, right? I was like, what's going on with Xbox? I'm like, I have no idea what's going on. You're like trying to explain it to me. I'm like, just give me the base level thing and we'll talk about it on the show this week.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of me was like, oh man, if this really happens, like what, like, I don't know. Like I knew it wasn't going to be like this end all be all thing for Xbox, but a little bit of me was like, man, this is going to suck. I love this platform. I had that Sega flashback moment as a Sega kid.
Like those of us who were Sega kids. Or who, like, I was not a Sega kid, but I loved the Dreamcast. Like, had kind of, like, Vietnam flashbacks.
Yeah.
And I think, like, I even, like, allowed myself to, like, drift to, like, the Wii U era rumors.
Yeah.
Of, like, what's going to happen in Nintendo and this and that, the early years, the PS3. Like, you know, every platform's kind of gone through this, and this is now Microsoft's time to go through this. There were so many rumors that sprung out of the original, I would say out of the original three, that ranged from they're exiting the hardware business to they are going to get rid of our digital libraries in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
Like all our purchases are gone. They're going fully digital, this and that, which I'm still pretty convinced they're going to go fully digital, but we'll talk about that in a few minutes.
Yeah. Or at least the console will come without a disc drive and you'll have to buy it separate.
Many things that were going out around it, and then like over the weekend, like all Phil Spencer, people were monitoring Phil Spencer's likes on Twitter. That's how deep this was going. This is the equivalent of NBA fans tracking private jets during free agency. That's what this is. We were monitoring his likes, and he was liking stuff about like people saying like, "Oh yeah, they need to make a handheld Xbox and this and that." And like, it would be so cool to have a handheld Xbox. Like, you could do it so much better in house than the ROG. And like, there's some tech blog that brought it up, and like, this person is right like one out of every five times, and they're like, "Hey, the Surface team is making the next Xbox." Xbox Era had another story. I want to say it's Xbox Era. I had another story saying Jason Ronald's not designing the next Xbox. That sent everybody into another frenzy. Not quite as bad as Starfield going to PlayStation, but it's like, oh my God. Like, just please let us get to Thursday. Phil announces it's going to be part of the Xbox podcast. That we're like,
I know.
What? Clearly showing that. How thrown together this was having to be. So we get it today. Oh, go ahead, Corey.
Oh, I was going to say, like, I was like, oh, they're going on the podcast. That's when I, like, if they're going on the Xbox podcast, like, I was like, this isn't as bad as everybody's going to think it is, because
no,
that it's clearly not the end of Xbox as we know it, right?
No. Like, but like that, the way that the phrasing happened, like it's going to be a business update and this and that. And it was very weird. Let's start at the beginning. I want to start at the beginning with what happened a few weeks ago. I want to start with the layoffs, because I think there was actually a lot of really good stuff to come out of today. We need to get through the ugly before we can get to the good stuff.
Yeah, I do. Speaking of the layoffs real quick today, I know it was kind of like a business thing, and they had to address it, but I did appreciate them acknowledging the layoff stuff.
I wish they would have talked about it a little bit more, frankly. I felt like it was just kind of an aside of like, oh, by the way, we laid off 1900 people because we're restructuring business. And it's like, I understand that's the official company line, but that seems like really callous to 1900 people who like make the games that we love.
Yeah.
I don't know how you handle that, but I'm not in PR. I don't know how you handle that better, but there has to be a better way to handle that, in my opinion. 1900 people laid off.
Yeah.
1900. Just Jesus, I don't even know where to start with on this one. Among the folks who were laid off, he wasn't explicitly laid off, but the timing was too coincidental. We speculated a lot about this from the minute that the announcement that Activision Blizzard King was joining Microsoft, that Mike Ybarra was not long for this.
Uh-huh.
And then came that really weird BlizzCon interview where he's like, yeah, they'll have to drag me out of here. Well, they dragged him out of there, all right. Mike Ybarra is gone as part of the restructuring going on at Blizzard.
Yeah.
Which I don't think any of us thought was going to happen this quickly. But Mike Ybarra is out.
Yeah.
They have already decided on his replacement.
The replacement is what she was like the lead on Call of Duty for a while.
Yeah, she was the Call of Duty franchise director, is what she was. Joanna Ferris.
Yeah.
I'm pulling up the press release about her. I will say, a lot of folks got really upset about this announcement. I saw nothing but positive stuff from people who work at Activision or used to work at Activision. They were all like, this is a great person to appoint. This is a person who clearly is there and will do what they are told to do. This is somebody who comes from marketing. Like, I need folks to understand that just because you're a creative doesn't mean that you like know how to run a billion-dollar studio.
Yeah, and that's just side tangent on that note, Josh. That's why I think like up until a certain point, Jim Ryan was actually pretty perfect for PlayStation because he knew how to run a business and grow a business. Now, granted, did he make some decisions that's questionable? Sure, maybe. Let's
he did it all while chasing the bottom line, which is the dollar.
Yeah,
and I think it's funny because like we talk about how like we love the executives like Phil and Reggie who play games and stuff, but notice they didn't work on games. Mm-hmm. They've been on the hardware and business side. Like it's why like I think like seeing people like Neil Druckmann be studio directors is a little bit different than like say when Jen O'Neill and Mike Ybarra were appointed to be head of Blizzard.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's different. Like I think the traditional way of like, oh well, you know, just somebody super senior is gonna like run the company, like that's gone. Like that's not happening. Like if you start an indie studio, like that's one thing, but I don't think it's happening in a lot of AAAs now. You want someone who knows the business and who can navigate this. And like Blizzard is one of the biggest entities under Microsoft now, not just under Xbox, like under Microsoft in general.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to wait and see how this one plays out. I mean, obviously Call of Duty was monetized to all hell and it'll be determined, you know, was that a Bobby Kotick thing? Is Microsoft going to continue that same aggressive monetization? We really don't know yet.
Yeah.
Among the other things that happens is they lay off the entire team at Blizzard that was working on that survival game.
Mm-hmm.
Which Jason Schreier had a really great piece on this that I encourage everybody to go read over on Bloomberg. But he basically said this game was originally being developed in an in-house engine and they wanted to change to Unreal and they were hopeful that Microsoft would let them do it. And instead Microsoft just canceled the game. And apparently this game's been in development for like 6 years. And it got canceled. I know that like every time a project gets canceled, we have people coming out saying like, this was the best work. That's one of the best things I've ever seen. It would have changed, you know, the genre and this and that. And like, I'm not doubting that, but like some of Blizzard's greatest creations have come out of cancellations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we all know the story of Titan.
Mm-hmm.
Titan gets canceled. Overwatch. Yeah. Titan was supposed to be an MMO and it becomes Overwatch.
Yeah.
Like, now granted the Overwatch IP has been so mismanaged, not even funny, but like they've signaled that they want to double down on these franchises. And like when you look at Blizzard and you look at the franchises they have, like you can do stuff with Warcraft that's not just WoW. You can do StarCraft has been dormant for how many years now?
Yeah. You could give that to World's Edge and have them make really great RTSs in those franchises again. Right.
Yeah. I mean, you could easily do that. They can oversee it. Like Microsoft wants these studios to be working together. You know, we talked about when we did our whole breakdown at the beginning of the year about all the studios at Xbox and what they were doing. What does that look like? You know, what does that look like? And one of the things we brought up is how many of these studios are working on multiple projects, like Hearthstone spun out of WoW. You know, Diablo is still Diablo. Overwatch, like there's still time to save Overwatch. And I really wonder if part of the decision came down to, we don't want to start a new IP without making sure the existing ones are strong. But there are still some things in incubation, from what I understand. It's just that's the most notable one that's gone. It's just gone now. Other studios that were hit particularly hard, there was a long time a community manager for Fallout that was released. She was let go. Toys for Bob saw, I believe, 30 employees let go. And they're getting rid of, they are getting rid of their physical office space. They are transitioning to being an entirely remote team, which was, that has now been clarified in the weeks since. That was a studio decision, and they got the approval from Microsoft to do that. And they are still at work on a new game, as well as working on supporting Call of Duty. They're basically like, it did not make sense for us to have office space for 50 of us. Sledgehammer, I believe, also saw 40 or 50 people released. I know Raven got hit during this. But there are just, there are a lot of studios across the board that got hit. It seems like most of the like Xbox game studios teams were largely safe. But that, the what does the word safe even mean when 1900 people are losing their jobs? Like, there there has to be a better way to address this. And like you said during the business meeting today, Tina brought up that, you know, 2023 was this incredible year for games, but the it wasn't a great year for the industry. And that kind of segued into Phil talking about, you know, like 1900 people lost their jobs here and this and that. And you're a $3 trillion company. You could find a way to help those people get new jobs or to keep them employed somehow. You can find a way. That, to me, that reeks of a decision that was not made by necessarily Phil Spencer, but that he was told to do by accountants with spreadsheets. You know, we talk about this on Tower Casuals a lot when it came to Bungie, but like, the certain people get let go and it's like, oh, you're just looking at numbers on a piece of paper then. Like, if you can fire Michael Salvatore, like, nobody is safe.
Right.
And it kind of feels that way here. Like, well, if you can lay off an entire team at Blizzard, like, nobody is safe. You can cut down the recruiting team at Blizzard from like 60 to 20. Like, nobody is safe. And a lot of these are like, not, like, kind of like Riot. Like, yeah, there's a lot of production roles, but it's a lot of people behind the scenes who are being let go too at these jobs. A lot of like, pardon the way I'm phrasing, it's a lot of like the more non-talented people. People like me who have no artistic ability whatsoever, who work in, you know, communications and, you know, in PR and things like that.
Yeah. Plus, I imagine a lot of people in stuff like payroll and, you know, does Microsoft really need three marketing teams? And you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it really seems like they're, and I mean, the whole point was trying to be, like, consolidate these teams.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a lot of people, man. It's a lot. It's, I understand that when mergers happen and acquisitions happen, like, there's going to be layoffs because there's overlap everywhere, but like,
there has to be a better way to do this.
Man, there's
so all that happens, and then this morning we hear that Embracer is laying off, Embracer is warning of further layoffs despite letting go of over 1,300 staff members since its restructuring began in June.
Yeah.
Second quarter saw 904 and then another 483 in the third quarter. The bigger news is, so that's 8% of their global workforce, which all these layoffs are always between like 8 and 10%. Have you ever noticed that?
Mm-hmm.
It's always that, no matter how big the company is. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
The company has also canceled 29 unannounced games over the past two quarters.
I know.
Including, as we've learned in recent weeks, Deus Ex.
Yeah. Did you see? Which, did you see the voice actor of Adam Jensen come out?
I did. Elias was talking about that. He.
They asked him not to talk about the character for like the last couple years or whatever.
Yeah, and he's like totally devastated because he's like, this is like the third project that I'm involved in that's been canceled.
Yeah.
In recent months, because he's not only a voice actor, he's also a voice. He actually was the voice director for Starfield.
Yeah.
And the voice of Sam Coe, but there has to be a better way. There has to be a better way. They are in the process of selling off parts of their business. There have been rumors for a while that Gearbox is up for sale, which is just wild.
Yeah, that rumor's been floating around for a long time, though.
It has been, and I mean, to be fair, that is the most valuable piece on the table.
Mm-hmm.
That, them, Crystal Dynamics, I don't know how IDES is these days, and the studio that works on Metro. 4A, is that the studio?
Yeah, yeah.
Those are probably, like, their most valuable chips there that you could deal. But if you deal them, you might as well just, like, close down the whole company. Yeah. So, it's just wild. Despite the ongoing restructure, which is set to end in March, Embracer is unlikely to hit its target of reducing net debt to below $762 million by the end of the financial year. He says certain divestments could significantly reduce debt post March 31st, 2024. The financial struggles began following the collapse of a $2 billion deal reportedly with Saudi government-funded Savvy Games Group. The Swedish games firm has since come under fire for sweeping cuts it has already made, including the closure of long-running Saints Row maker Volition. Last month, it emerged Embracer has canceled a new Deus Ex game that was 2 years in the development and laid off 97 staffers at Eidos Montreal. The unannounced third mainline entry in the Deus Ex series was supposed to enter production later this year. However, developer Eidos Montreal reportedly focused on an original franchise instead. It's just wild. Elsewhere across Embracer, there have been layoffs at Black Forest Games, Lost Boys Interactive, and Nimble Giant. Amid all of this, some of the games that released during the third quarter of the financial year have not met expectations, but revealed recently released Deep Rock Galactic Survivor is off to a strong start, and Tomb Raider 1-3 Remastered is also off to a strong start. And this comes from Wesley Yinpool over at IGN. So, just what the fuck, man? Embracer is everything that we feared that the Microsoft acquisitions would be. And to be fair, has finally lived up to that, like firing 1,900 people. Like, Jesus Christ. Like, we've basically already eclipsed what all of 2023 was in terms of layoffs.
We're close, if we're not there already. We are close.
Between Microsoft, Embracer, Riot, and Unity alone. That's like 8,000 employees, I think, right there, just between those four. It's absolutely asinine.
Yeah, it's something.
It's not great.
It's not wonderful.
All right, Corey, we got to talk about this business meeting.
Yeah, this is the meat and potatoes.
This is the meat and potatoes. This is the other reason why we're here tonight. I've got a lot of stuff here, both from the stream and from some pieces that The Verge did afterwards. Tom Warren clearly got to view this ahead of time. He had an interview with Phil Spencer ready to go the second that this went up. So, let's go ahead and jump on in. They said originally, they said at the top of the show, and we should say the panel was Tina Amini moderating. Phil Spencer, Sarah Bond, and Matt Booty were on the panel. They originally started talking about plans to do a show like this back in December. Mm-hmm. And Phil kind of threw shade at the leakers and at anybody who was writing reports and basically said, y'all kind of forced our hand before we were ready.
Yeah.
There were like people and like employees at Xbox were freaking out because even like some higher level executives at Xbox did not know what was happening when those reports started coming out.
Yeah.
Which makes me think that the Starfield thing was always bogus. He says exclusivity will start with four games going to other consoles. They didn't confirm the titles in the show, which I saw a lot of people like scratching their heads and being like, why wouldn't you announce this? It's because like three of those are probably being announced at the Nintendo Direct next week.
Yeah.
Which Jeff Grubb did come out this morning and say, he said this morning, he was like, by the way, there was supposed to be a Nintendo Direct today and they pushed it to allow Microsoft to do their business event. So
yeah, I was wondering that.
Hi-Fi Rush Nintendo is also a guarantee. It's a guarantee.
Hi-Fi Rush and Pentiment, I would say, are the two for Switch.
I've got three.
Well, I mean, like those would be the two that I would say for sure. I would say Grounded might be the third.
Grounded is the other one.
Yeah,
it's the other one that's showing up there. Yeah,
yeah,
because that's the target audience for those games.
Mm-hmm.
Sea of Thieves has already been teasing it on their socials, but
yeah,
Phil basically said he's going to let those But he's going to let them announce when they're ready to announce. He's like, some of them, you're going to hear about these very soon. But he's like, these four is it. We're not doing anything else right now. He was like, we want to see how these four do in reception and how these other platforms embrace them before we even consider anything else.
Mm-hmm.
He made explicitly clear,
mm-hmm.
Indiana Jones and Starfield are not coming to other platforms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For right now, they are not coming to other platforms. I do think that will change eventually, and that's because of what Phil says going forward. Going forward, the goal is to reach as many gamers as possible and to grow by utilizing other platforms. Console growth has largely stagnated. Yes, mm-hmm. we see things like the Switch being super successful, but that's like, Nintendo has these cycles every once in a while where like they just have a super successful console.
Yeah, and like the Switch fills a niche that doesn't exist anywhere else until recently, right? So, yeah.
But like PC gaming is more accessible than ever before. That's cutting into market share, and this and that. The phrase that was thrown around from Sarah Bond at an internal town hall meeting at the end of last week, beginning of this week, was that they see every screen in the world as an Xbox. And that's very much mm-hmm. been Microsoft's approach if you listen to them at all for like the last 7 or 8 years.
I mean, ever since they started like hinting at xCloud, that was like their thing, right? I mean,
I always go back to the Gamescom demo behind closed doors of what Crackdown 3 was originally supposed to be mm-hmm. and how they were using cloud tech to power that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I go back to.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they've been planning it for a very long time. We'll know soon what games they are, blah, blah, blah. We already said that. Every decision is about the long-term health of the Xbox platform, and they were very careful mm-hmm. to not say like a physical box, but the platform is the all-encompassing digital landscape of these games and of this business.
It's the Xbox, it's the ecosystem, it's probably your PCs at some point, it's probably your xCloud, you know, whatever.
They placed a lot of emphasis during this event on Play Anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you remember when they first started talking about that several years ago, people lost their shit about that, too.
Oh, yeah, when Quantum Break was announced for PC, right?
Quantum Break, like ReCore, they had a version of Forza 7, believe it or not,
mm-hmm.
That were all announced. Gears Ultimate, I think, came to PC as well.
Mm-hmm.
Sunset Overdrive, it took a couple years to get there, but it came eventually, too. Like, there have been games that they have done this with. People freaked out, and Microsoft had to explain, no, we see Xbox as anywhere that these games can be. Like, PC games fall underneath Xbox, you know, like Aura mm-hmm. and, you know, Aura is one of those, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Age of Empires has been one of those, like, they come to PC first, then they come to Xbox later on, because that's what makes sense for the business.
Yeah.
So, like, and why would you want to invest all these resources into something like Age of Empires, where, like, maybe 0.2% of the people who play this are actually going to play it seriously on Xbox?
Yeah.
You know, you want your 4X games to be on, you know, you want those to be on PC. And so why not invest all the resources there and then bring it over? You know, Flight Sim made a lot of sense to go to PC first, and they saw what a sensation it was on Xbox. And, oh, we'll release everything else now, day and date, because it makes sense. That's another one that has been rumored to go to other platforms and would not shock me. Why wouldn't you want that on PS5? What is this hurting to take these games that have been out on Xbox for years and bring them to other platforms? They have clearly reached their target audience. They have reached the limit of their reach. Why not reinvigorate it? It's going to allow games like Sea of Thieves and Grounded to have a bigger player base, to have more money come into it. You're still getting these games on Game Pass, by the way. You're having to pay full price on these other platforms.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That's the kicker for me.
There's two things, right? So there are franchises you could point to and be like, if they start coming to other platforms, maybe you could change your tune, right? Like, I think
Halo, I would start
Halo,
panicking.
Gears, Forza.
Yep, Fable.
Probably Fable.
Yeah.
Those
would be the big four for me. If those came, I would start panicking.
But like, you could say you could play it on Game Pass on the Xbox ecosystem, or you can pay $60-$70 for the game over here on PlayStation or Switch or whatever the next platform is, right? And like, you buy one for $70 because you don't think it's worth it. Then the next game comes. Okay, I'll pay $70. By the time you buy three games, you like in a year, if they do have some sort of cadence like that, like you'll be like, oh, well, maybe I should consider getting Game Pass maybe I should get an Xbox Series S or their handheld when it comes out, or
right,
you know, something along those lines. Just a box that can play Xbox games. And it's like, oh, well, now it makes sense, right? And there, I think there are certain games you could release day and date. I think a lot of MMO or games as a service make sense. I think there are ones that you could delay, you know, release 6 months later, a year later. Like Hi-Fi Rush is a perfect example of something like that. You know, I think we're getting to that point. And even PlayStation, right? They released their financial stuff, what, yesterday?
This morning? A couple days ago.
Yeah, and they are like, we are trying to extend our bottom line, and we're looking at, you know, extending way into PC and even multi-platform for certain games. And I'm like, cool. Helldivers would kill on every platform it's on.
Right? Oh, great, like, game, by the way. Great game.
Yeah, I know. I want to play it really bad. I haven't gotten a chance to play it yet. But you know,
it's one of those things that, like, they're recognizing now that they need to change their business strategy rather than waiting until they're already in the gutter. And like, let's be honest, nobody is saying, aside from the weirdos on, you know, some of the weirdo fanboys, Hi-Fi Rush and Pentiment were not selling consoles. I love both of those games. Both of those made my top 10 games of the years they were released. I think Pentiment in particular is one of the finest games that Obsidian, a very storied studio, has ever made. But those games are not going to sell tons of copies. Like, Josh Sawyer has literally said, without Game Pass, we don't get to make Pentiment. You don't want Hi-Fi Rush to go to another platform? Well, maybe you guys should have fucking played it. Because last time I checked the numbers on that, I think only like 3 million people had played it. And that included Game Pass and people who bought it on Steam. Like, maybe you should only have fucking played this game.
Something like 20% of the people that played it beat it. It was like really low. And that game is only an 8 to 10 hour game.
Yeah, like, maybe y'all should fucking play these games that you want so badly. Like, I know for a fact none of y'all played Pentiment. Because nobody talked about that fucking game, and it's magnificent.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know, like, what you guys expect us to say about things like that, but like something like Sea of Thieves. Sea of Thieves is about to celebrate its 6th anniversary, a game that most of us did not think would make it to year 2 because it was so bad at launch. Now it's one of the most successful multiplayer games that Xbox has ever released.
Right.
Like, Halo, Forza, and Gears are the three that are more successful as a franchise than Sea of Thieves. So you know what? Let that come to another platform. Who cares? That's more people spending money in that shop to get you more DLCs. I think we all forget the two major expansions for that game, Pirates and Monkey Island, both were free.
Yeah.
Those were free.
Right.
I would have expected that in any other reality, we would have paid $20 for the Pirates of the Caribbean expansion. We would have gladly done it, too.
Yeah.
But those are free. Yeah, there's season passes and this and that. But now with, like, the Safer Seas update, there's no reason why that can't come to PlayStation 5.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think this is a game that's going to come to Switch. It's probably going to come to the Switch 2 when it comes out. But there's no reason why, you know, well, Nintendo's going to fix their internet, too. But there's no reason why this can't come to PS5. And our friend Ray was pointing this out to me earlier today, too. He said something that I was really thinking about. He says, they keep talking about long-term health of these franchises. He goes, people need to understand that the more folks playing these games, because first of all, they're paying for these games. They're going to pay for microtransactions, things like that inside. They are going to fund the next game from Rare. Mm-hmm. They're going to fund the next game from Tango Gameworks. You know, they're going to fund these games in a way that Xbox fans really can't, because the way that Game Pass is, Game Pass has really, like, as much as we love it as consumers and it's super consumer friendly, it makes it really hard to make money on games. That's why I think we were all surprised that Starfield was the 10th best selling game of the year last year. People still bought it on Steam. So, like, if you're going to bring it a year or two later to other platforms, fine. Phil Spencer had a great quote during this where he says, over the next 5 to 10 years, exclusives are going to become a smaller and smaller part of the industry as a whole. Yeah. And I fully agree with that, with one caveat. I don't think Nintendo ever quite gets there. And I don't think they have to. There's a difference. Nintendo very much marches to the... Now, a day will come where Nintendo's probably going to have to cave to it and do it.
I'm gonna say this though about Nintendo, right? Their games, aside from like the very rare occurrence of maybe like Zelda And even then, I wouldn't say this, but Nintendo's budget and the way they create games is totally different than the way someone like Naughty Dog or 343 or the Coalition or someone like that creates games, right? They don't do mocap. They very rarely use voice acting, right?
I'm not arguing that. I'm saying, like, from a business perspective, at a certain point,
mm-hmm.
I think that demand for the catch up to tech is going to be there, and they're going to have to do it. They're going to have to do something.
I agree with you, but they're definitely going to be the last ones to hold out. So, something's happening outside Josh's window. What's going on?
There is a fire truck outside my window? Question mark.
Oh.
It's just like driving through the parking lot. No lights on or anything.
Huh. Is your apartment on fire?
No. I don't hear any sirens or anything.
It's just, it's very loud when it drives by. Anyway, so let's go ahead and continue with this. They said repeatedly, we want to be a platform for creators. And by creators, they mean, you know, game creators, obviously. We looked at games that are over a year old and some are community driven and that have reached their current potential. These are franchises we want to invest in. We know they see Sea of Thieves as a cornerstone franchise. We know that Grounded, they see Grounded as a big IP for them. That was a game that I think, now that's an example of something they did not expect to be as good as it was.
Yeah.
That, I remember when that went into early access, and remember it sold like 3 million copies on Steam in like a month. It was some wild success when it went into game preview. And it was like, part of that's because it launched like a week after the big Xbox event that summer. But it was like, huh, okay, well, that's a thing.
Right.
So that's cool. Like, that's cool. Like, we already know, like, that's a franchise they plan to expand on because they're, you know, they're doing the TV show and everything else. There's been some talk going around in recent weeks about Obsidian is working on either a massive update for it, like a big DLC, or, you know, maybe Grounded 2.0, you know, another Grounded game. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense to introduce this franchise to other platforms. Sea of Thieves, it's reached its cap, but it has had phenomenal growth.
Mm-hmm.
That game's had like 30 million unique players or something.
Something ridiculous.
Across Xbox One, Series X, and PC, that's pretty good. You've kind of strapped that, but they're putting it out there because now there's something to compete with it. Skull and Bones is coming out, and they're going to be like, this isn't that good. And then, oh, but hey, here's Sea of Thieves.
Mm-hmm.
PlayStation players can get in on Sea of Thieves now. You know? So, yep. Looking forward, they say there's a story of introducing franchises on other platforms to grow the brand. There are no promises we're making beyond these four games. We see this as a learning opportunity. That's PR speak. Of course, these games are good. Like, at least Sea of Thieves and Grounded are going to do good. And hey, maybe that influences the decision. Maybe they go, well, okay, so our more niche artistic titles aren't really getting picked up even by these other studios or by these other platforms. I still think Hi-Fi Rush is going to do great on the Switch, but that's another subject entirely. I think the lesson that's probably going to be taken away from this is, well, if we want to make some more like unique multiplayer games like Grounded, like, because, I mean, Phil made sure to point out, we put every Minecraft game on other platforms, you know, the spinoffs and everything, you know, Dungeons did great on the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
Legends didn't do great for anyone because the Minecraft audience didn't want that game.
Yeah.
You know, and that's more of a miscue there, but like Dungeons was a huge success between Game Pass and the Switch.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you want more people playing these?
hasn't Minecraft like outsold the Xbox version on Switch by like something ridiculous, like 6-1 or something?
I don't think so. I know it's done really good, but I don't think it's nearly by that amount. Because the Xbox, the 360 and Xbox One versions of Minecraft were massive. The 360 one in particular, because that was the first console version.
Yeah.
That one went, for a while there, I did not know a single person who did not have that when I was in college. Because that was right around the time that they bought Mojang. So they got it there first, and there were all sorts of problems with the original Nintendo and PlayStation versions. The Switch version, I know, is very popular on Minecraft, but I still think that the Xbox One, probably similar numbers. I know that it's very popular on Switch.
I'm okay. So I found an article from this is from 2021, so it's 3 years ago, right?
Okay.
Minecraft obviously blew up. This in fiscal year 2021, Minecraft made 4 times more revenue on Nintendo Switch than it does on Xbox. The game also made 2 times as much revenue on PlayStation than it did on Xbox. PC is still the best selling platform.
Yeah, I mean that kind of tracks. So Xbox kind of skews towards more like adult gamers.
Yeah. Okay.
I would say in terms of its franchises. Regardless of what is happening, they did mention some games have shown they can be bigger than a platform and that influences their business strategy. Specifically, Matt Moody called out Fortnite and Roblox as two examples. And I think they have a game like that. It's called Call of Duty.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Minecraft. You know, those are both these huge platforms. And I think they think, hey, maybe something like Sea of Thieves can do this. Matt Piscatello was pointing this out. He's been pointing this out for a few weeks now. This is a smart idea because games like Minecraft, Roblox, Fortnite, Apex, like, have such a strong hold on the industry that, like, people just get, they get sucked into one game and that's what they play so much of. And those games together hold so much of the industry that it's very hard for other games to break in. That's why Baldur's Gate 3 is such a huge success story. You know, but they also say all games, regardless of their business strategy, all games will continue to be Xbox first and Game Pass day one. Game Pass will continue to be an Xbox only thing. So any of you who are hoping it would come to Switch 2, the dream is dead.
Yeah.
They're basically taking Nintendo strategy of, no, you're going to pay for this shit on the Switch.
Yeah.
Which I'm going to be honest, I'm like more than happy to, if I can buy a physical copy of Pentiment or Hi-Fi Rush on the Switch, I'm going to do it.
Hi-Fi Rush, I bet, gets one. I don't know if Pentiment will get one. Sorry, man.
Hey, maybe limited run. You never know. But I'd probably just buy
them. And you'll get it, like...
I'd probably just buy them for the Xbox at that point.
You'll get the limited run versions, like, 6 years from now.
Oh, my God. Continuing on the idea of everything coming to Game Pass, Activision Blizzard King games are going to be coming to Game Pass, starting with Diablo 4 on March 28th. I actually wonder if that'll be, like, the cornerstone of a very big drop that day.
Mm-hmm.
There's also been a word that Tales of Arise is coming to Game Pass.
It's official. They announced it today.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. 34 million Game Pass subscribers. That does include Game Pass Core now.
That seems low.
It does seem low, but then I remember like how few Xbox Ones and Series X's have actually been sold. This number does feel like kind of it feels very low to me, but
especially when you like, I mean, I know PC
and Core especially.
Yeah. And but like, I know PC Game Pass isn't like amazing, but like still, I don't know.
It felt low to me too. Cause at first I was like, oh, well, if they had said that was without Core, I would understand it.
Yeah.
But yeah, they just kind of like snuck that in there. They did point out that they are the only platform that does Play Anywhere. For those of you who don't remember what Xbox Play Anywhere is, it's if you buy a game. And it's not just Xbox that does this. Other companies can participate in this in conjunction with Xbox. If you buy a game on Xbox, you also own the version on PC through the Windows Store.
Yeah.
I mean, which is really cool. We've seen some third parties take advantage of this.
Yeah. I mean, Ubisoft is usually pretty good about that, especially if you're a Ubisoft Plus member.
Yeah.
They do that. But I mean, I don't know if it's a game to game basis or if it's
just a game to game. Yeah.
Whatever.
This is basically my takeaway was this is just the next evolution of their strategy with Play Anywhere. You know, Play Anywhere kind of phased in a little bit too, because at the beginning of that they were like, hey, we're not planning on bringing everything to PC, and then they kind of did.
Mm-hmm.
Like starting with Series X, everything came to PC, and that's been a great move for them.
I mean, some of it was PC first.
They saw the dollar signs.
Some of it was PC first. I mean, look at Gears Tactics and Flight Sim.
Right, and that goes back to what we were saying earlier. Like, it made sense for those games to go to PC first. That was the target audience for those games.
Yeah.
You can debate about Gears Tactics, but I still think that was a great move to put it on PC first.
Yeah, and Gears Tactics, what a great game.
This isn't the first time that we've seen it, though. Like, they called it out specifically. They said, we put the Ori games on the Switch. You know? They said that during this presser. You know, we did that. The biggest surprise thing for me, we're talking about games coming to the Switch. How is Rare Replay still not coming to the Switch?
I know.
That feels like the biggest slam dunk of money you could ever get.
Yeah. I'm wondering, especially with like how they were saying, man, I mean, we still don't know what that fourth game is. I know Grounded is like the
we do know what it is. It's Grounded. The Verge confirmed it.
Yeah, well, they also said Xbox was going away, so
I'm just saying
I know.
They've confirmed it. Famitsu has confirmed it. The four games are Hi-Fi Rush, Pentiment, Grounded, and Sea of Thieves. It's happening.
I can't believe Rare Replay is not on the Switch yet.
Regardless. I think it's really funny. I genuinely think that's the funniest fucking thing. And it's because like so many of the games that like folks would want from Rare Replay are already on the Virtual Console. Both Banjo games, I believe Perfect Dark is on there. I think Conker might be the only N64 game that's not on there. Jet Force Gemini is on it.
I don't think Perfect Dark is on it.
Oh, well,
GoldenEye is on it.
That might be because it's rated M. GoldenEye's on there because they had to get Nintendo's cooperation.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Which that continues to be another very funny example of like they've put stuff on other platforms. They put it on the Switch and on the Xbox and they didn't do anything with PlayStation. That's hilarious to me.
And it's also funny that the Switch version is the only one with online multiplayer.
That I suspect that was part of the rights deal.
Well, I think it's just part of the Nintendo 64 emulator and how it works.
It very well could be.
So,
they pointed out that they are technically speaking one of the biggest publishers on both Nintendo and Sony consoles, and that's because of Mojang, that's because of Activision Blizzard King, that's because of ZeniMax, like.
Mm-hmm.
They said that you still have to grow business. Like, this is basically, Phil was like, I've been here since before Xbox launched, and I want to set us up for the next 20 years. And that's the way you're going to do it. Going digital.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to be on any screen in the world. He did emphasize the hardware is not going anywhere. Let's see here. Basically parsing down a quote from, I think it was from Sarah Bond. 2023 was a great year for games. The industry didn't grow. When you don't grow, you have layoffs. You have to build a sustainable injury. Do you stay with a fixed amount of players, or do you expand the reach of your business? It was either her or Phil that said that, and I thought that was like really, really relevant to what we've been discussing tonight, mm-hmm. because you do have to face that. Like, you know, how do you continue to bring more players in when you're kind of hitting like a stagnant point? Like, people are so entrenched in where they want to play that it's hard. Like, I mean, the PS5 is now underselling the PS4 and they're expecting that to drop off even more this year,
mm-hmm.
Which feels wild to say when you look at some of those games. But then like pair that with the comments from the new head of Sony, who was like, we feel like we're in the late stages of the PS5. We're like, whoa, wait, what? God of War Ragnarok was a cross-platform title literally 15 months ago.
Yeah, but I mean, like, these consoles are coming up on 4 or 5 years old. Like, I mean,
well, I think that part of what the back part of this presentation is, as they get into the hardware that we're about to talk about,
yeah,
is that traditional console generations are going away.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
Xbox has been trying to do that for a while, though.
They've been trying to do that for years, and yeah. we weren't ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think people are too ready for it. I think things like the Steam Deck and the incremental upgrades that, I mean, like, look at this, how the Steam Deck went from the Steam Deck to the OLED within like 18 months. People were all upset, but like, that's the incremental update, like a phone.
Yeah. I think Nintendo is also doing that, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Nintendo has some work to do. They need to get the Switch 2 needs to be, I mean, we know that's been reported to be as powerful as PS4 Pro, which, to be honest, is still pretty damn good,
mm-hmm.
for a handheld device. They really need to be aiming for something on the level of like what the Steam Deck does.
Uh-huh.
And I know Nintendo doesn't want to do that, but they need to. Straight up. But this is not the Nintendo show. This is Xbox Casuals. I'll be happy to talk about Switch 2 theories, though, at some point. They said hardware updates are coming this holiday, which that's got to be the Digital Series X.
Yeah.
And the new controller, I imagine the new controller probably launches this summer with the console coming this fall.
Yeah.
Please
don't put rubber grips on it. My hands are allergic to it.
Oh, I love the rubber grips.
Stop it. I wanted that one controller. There's two controllers that came out over the last year, and I couldn't get them because they have the rubber grips on it.
I'm sorry. I really love the rubber grips. I do sympathize with you, though. The goal is always to keep that. This was really important. I think Matt Booty was talking about this. The goal is to always keep your saves and digital libraries alive. We want to respect the investment that our players make. That was really important because I think that was a huge point of concern for people. And I like how he kept pointing out, like, our games exist on PC too. So, like, your stuff is everywhere. Mm-hmm. But that they see the plat, they say you're playing on a platform where, you know, the biggest games are coming day one to your Xbox. You have Game Pass with day one drops, player first features that include cross play, cross save, backwards compatibility, and you're playing somewhere where we value the investment. And then Matt Booty kind of caps it up by saying, we have more announcements about stuff for 2024 coming in June. Like, we have not told you everything that's coming this year. They specifically named, you know, Hellblade, Aura, Avowed, Indiana Jones, Towerborn. And then he says, we still have more. We have more stuff to talk about.
Great.
Yeah, fantastic. Like, whether that's, you know, just hardware or whatever, fantastic. Some quotes that I thought were really important from that, from the Verge pieces that went up today. And then we can kind of like segue out of this, I guess, but I think these were really good ones for us to talk about. Tom Warren says this in one of his pieces, let's start with Phil Spencer. This direct quote pulled from one of the Verge's articles: Xbox fan reactions will inform Microsoft's next steps. I always take the feedback from our most ardent fans very seriously, admits Phil Spencer, who's not sold on the idea of exclusives always helping Xbox console sales. We know today when people are playing, their affinity for their platform is as much about their friends and where their games library is as it is any one kind of exclusive game. I know there's this fictitious world where people think that one exclusive game kind of kicks off the sales of a platform, but the industry just doesn't really work that way today. I would co-sign this. I think the last game you really had that did this was probably Spider-Man on the PlayStation. Spider-Man 1 on the PS4.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think sales not necessarily like slowed, but they really kicked up into another gear again, even though we were nearing the end of the generation, because it's Spider-Man. It's an exclusive Spider-Man game. So I would argue that. Also, I think Blessing Aoti from Kind of Funny made a good point. I think it was Blessing, I may be misattributing this. We will never see people need to understand the run that we saw on the PlayStation 4 as quickly as we did will never happen again.
No.
Like in a three, four year span, you had Horizon Zero Dawn, Spider-Man, God of War, Dreams, Days Gone, Ghost of Tsushima, The Last of Us 2, Miles Morales, Demon's Souls, Sackboy's Big Adventure, Astrobot's Playroom, and there's probably something I'm forgetting in there. That is an insane run. That is, yeah. I mean, I included some PS5 launch titles in there, but those all launched in 2020. That is absurd. And like the fact that every one of those reviewed pretty well, with the exception of Days Gone. That's just like the only company that does that is Nintendo. And like you said, Nintendo does their exclusives on a different level. Like you look at everything that goes into a typical PlayStation exclusive, and it's not sustainable.
No, I mean, when Spider-Man 2 has like a $312 million budget, that's unsustainable. And
10 million copies is like barely breaking profitable.
Yeah,
that's absolutely insane. Like the AAA crash is coming, and it's coming very fast.
Yep.
So I think Xbox is doing the smart thing by getting out in front and also leaving themselves some wiggle room to say, hey, we got to make money on this business. We can port these to other platforms.
Mm-hmm.
We can make some of this money back without compromising on Game Pass just yet. But I'm not totally sold that Game Pass is going to exist here in a few years.
I think it'll exist, but in a different form.
It's going to be a more premium purchase.
Yeah.
But Tom Warren says, one of the things he said in his, I understand Microsoft has previously been weighing up the idea of bringing Gears of War, Flight Sim, and even the next Doom game to rival platforms. Final decisions haven't been made on these other games, but there's bound to be more than just four. As the strategy evolves, it's clear there will be some interesting decisions being made about the future of Xbox games and exclusivity. I don't think that Flight Sim or Doom coming to another platform is a cause for concern. Doom is a franchise that has existed on other platforms since the 1990s.
Yep.
At this point, especially if it's concluding a storyline that has already been told in 2016 and in Eternal, it would be a disservice to other players to not allow that game on other platforms.
Yep. No, and I agree.
Like, look at how well Doom Eternal sold, like, across the spectrum. Like, that game's going to do bonkers numbers on PlayStation.
Yeah, I mean, it even sold over 1 million units on Switch, so that should tell you something.
And the Switch version was terrible.
I'm talking to somebody who played it, because I run a Nintendo podcast, so...
2016 ran good.
Yeah. Well, after, like, 3 months of patches, sure.
Eternal, we don't talk about.
I would say the best running game like that on the Switch would be Wolfenstein 2.
Yeah, I think that also, like, Machine Games also doesn't make something, like, as graphically intense as id.
Yeah.
So, that probably helps you. Phil Spencer says, I don't think we should, as an industry, ever rule out a game going to any other platform. Of course, people have run in completely insane with that quote already, using that as evidence that Starfield is still going to come to other platforms, and I'm just exhausted already thinking about that. I tell you honestly, running the business, having diversity of business models that are working is pretty critical. The one thing I will say about the Game Pass subscriber revenue is that it's consistent. You can look at it. It's growing. You can kind of see its growth. You know, plus or minus, what it's going to be next month and the month after. And that's from Phil Spencer. So they see that as, like, reliable revenue. Like, basically, if you own an Xbox, you probably have Game Pass at this point.
Yeah.
Just be totally, if you have a Series X or S, you probably have Game Pass.
Yeah, I would assume so. Yeah, I mean, unless your kid is only, like, into Fortnite, right? Like, that would be, like, the one caveat. But, like,
yeah, if you're using it as, like, a Fortnite box or something, yeah,
mm-hmm. or a Destiny box, like some of our friends.
last quote from Phil. I found this really interesting on the subject of Xbox potentially pursuing a handheld device. We have real work to do in that area. One of the weak points in the experience on a ROG or on the Legion Go is Windows. How Windows works on controller input only, that kind of DPI on a smaller 8 or 7 inch screen. That's a real design point that our platform team is working with Windows on to make sure the experience is even better. It's been a pretty popular thought over the last couple of weeks that potentially the Series S gets phased out with next generation. Mm-hmm. And that they go for I wouldn't say it's a Switch competitor. I would say it's more of, like, something that can exist alongside the Steam Deck.
Yeah, I would say it's probably more of a Steam Deck competitor, or a Steam Deck like device that you can put your, like, take your Xbox library with you, right? That seems
right.
And also, and Tom Warren said something about that today too, right?
Yeah, I pulled this directly from his piece.
Yeah.
He seems to just kind of, like, be throwing stuff at the wall in regards to that, because, you know, he's also one of those, like, Phil Spencer's liked a lot of tweets about this. I would say that's several years away, though, if you're going to do that, because you have to fix Windows first.
Yeah.
Almost the better strategy would be just, like, make your own Xbox OS at that point, but I imagine they want it to be Windows, so you can stake and point to it and say, hey, look, our OS allows you to run Steam and Epic on it.
Yeah, and I wonder if the...
that on PlayStation or on the Switch.
I wonder if the ROG Ally is, like, a test bed, and they're seeing how the Armory Crate kind of improves and seeing if they can do their own version of that at some point.
I do think that that's what's happening.
Yeah, because, like, I was talking to our friend Laurent the other day, and he has a ROG Ally, and he loves it. And we had a whole full-blown conversation about the Armory Crate and how it works and, like, what you can do with it. And it had me wondering, like, what Xbox's version of that would look like if they did a PC, like a handheld PC.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, there's a lot of different directions they can go here. And I don't want to, like, you know, put any words in Phil Spencer's mouth, but I do feel like that's probably the next logical step to go beyond the S. Because if you're going to do something similar to the S again, next generation, the specs have got to be better. The specs need to be closer to the premium model than they were this time. Because mm-hmm. you don't want another Baldur's Gate 3 situation happening.
Yeah.
That's why I think, like, a handheld would be fine, because if you can even hit the Steam Deck specs with something like, or like whatever Steam Deck 2 looks like in 2 years, mm-hmm. right?
You got
to
hit ahead.
Something similar to that, then you're fine. Because then anything that's deck verified will be verified to work on yours as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's where we're going personally.
Yeah. Personally, I wish it would just be a portable Xbox, but I understand the initiative of, like, hey, if you're going to play anywhere, Windows is the grander kind of operating system, right?
And I mean, I do think that, because I think you also can promote that, like, I personally have come around to the way of thinking that the next Xbox, the way that they have been talking, and they want it to be basically just a box where you play any game that you own from anybody. They want it to be a box that supports multiple stores, but also respects your Xbox history,
yeah,
your achievements, your, mm-hmm. there's been a long talk about an achievement overhaul, respects your digital libraries, your backwards compatibility and things like that. What if the next Xbox was basically what the Steam box wanted to be?
Yeah.
What if you're able to access Steam, Epic, GOG, and mm-hmm. the Xbox fronts all from your living room couch?
Yeah. Part of me wonders if that's why, because little, in case you don't know, I work for an enterprise tech marketing company and we work with a company called Microsoft. And recently we've been talking about how Windows 12 has kind of been delayed on, like, not that it's been announced, but it's kind of quietly been delayed in the background,
right,
to implement more features, a lot of security features, but also, like, we also kind of know that they kind of want Windows 12 to match up with the next Xbox, and kind of they run the same kind of OS simultaneously, where the Xbox kind of has this weird custom version of Windows 12, but also has mm-hmm. like an Xbox operating system, but also like the Xbox app, I think we can all agree, on Windows 11 kind of blows. I know they want to improve that to be more like a proper Xbox app that maybe you would see on your phone or on an Xbox on your TV, and almost kind of the way that Windows 10 was, right, with the tiles, but like more efficient and may way more interesting. So yeah, Microsoft is doing some interesting things with their operating system moving forward, and I wonder if they're going to unify the Xbox and Windows stores and their like that side of the operating system and stuff. So
yeah, I think that has to be something that's being talked about at this point,
especially if they're going to do the handheld too.
Yeah, I don't think that you can say that you want to be the platform where you can play anything anywhere and then not do those. And I mean, especially, like, think of what a leg up that gives you if, like, PlayStation games start going to Steam day one, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, imagine being able to say, oh yeah, I'm playing on my Xbox handheld, or oh yeah, I'm playing on my Xbox, like, Series X Mark II or whatever they decide to call the next box, and I'm playing Helldivers 3 on it. I don't even have to buy a PlayStation now, you know, this and that. Like, I do think that
God of War on Xbox through Steam. Jeez.
Right. Like, that's essentially how I see it. Like, these companies are going to get your money no matter what. And why not expand that reach? Like, they've got to be seeing some of the numbers that Microsoft does. I really think that Starfield number and the numbers that we've heard reported from Sea of Thieves through Steam over the years has really made, like, some of the accountants at Sony do, like, a double take and be like, should we be looking at this more carefully? Then, I mean, they have to see the numbers their own games have done. You know, mm-hmm. look at what Spider-Man and especially Horizon did on PC. Like, this, the certain games are testing beds, and, you know, they're still not closing the gap that much, but they're going to have to. Like, there's consumer demand for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and right now they still think that, you know, because they're still looking at this kind of antiquated, like, oh, well, you know, people are going to buy our box just to come play those couple of games. And yeah, that does work in some situations. I know people who bought a PlayStation just to play Spider-Man 2.
Mm-hmm.
But they also wanted to play, like, six other games.
Yeah.
Spider-Man 2 was just the game that broke the camel's proverbial back.
Yeah.
So at what point do you just say enough is enough? We're going to put these games at least on at least on PC day one. Because Sony's not in the position of needing to put their stuff everywhere else. Like, Microsoft is. And that's mm-hmm. largely because of mismanagement made back in 2011 and 2012.
Yeah.
That they're still paying for today. And probably will continue paying for.
I can't believe how that one presentation and that one, like, set of decisions from the leadership team back then is still affecting the Xbox brand now. It's mind-boggling that's the damage that was done.
It's the curse of Phil Harrison, buddy.
God, yeah. Phil Harrison.
Phil Harrison. Yep. So... I don't really have anything else to add on this. I think we've kind of exhausted all the talking points of a 23-minute presentation and a handful of interviews.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't really looked at too many reactions from other folks because I just can't bring myself to look at certain people.
Mm-hmm.
Certain Xbox personalities, I'm just like, I don't really care about anyone who is like not a journalist at this point.
Yeah.
I don't really care about like random YouTubers or Twitter personalities and what they have to say.
Mm-hmm.
But at least there's not the sky is falling attitude, it sounds like.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's, I don't really have anything else to say either. I'm happy this didn't turn out like the dumpster fire everybody thought it was going to turn out as. I'm glad we kind of sat here and had a good discussion about it instead of just like, you know, doing the show on Monday and speculating, yeah. Right? Like I think that was
it was the right move for us to push it. We didn't want to, but it was the right move too. I do have one set of numbers I want to share. I wasn't able to find this tweet before, but we're talking about install bases and how they really haven't changed. Chris Deary from GamesIndustry.biz tweeted this out earlier today. PS2 Xbox combined was just under 180 million install base. PS3 360 was around 170. PS4 Xbox One was around 180. But the mid-gen upgrade really skewed things.
Mm-hmm.
PlayStation Xbox market just hasn't grown in terms of the audience. Revenue, absolutely, but there comes a point where you need new customers. And that seems to be what Xbox is understanding right now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're understanding it in a way that like PlayStation really hasn't gotten to that point. And I also think Xbox is better equipped to do that because they own Windows.
Yeah.
They caught on to Steam years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say, when they started messing around with Play Anywhere, I think that's when they started to realize that they needed to grow their audience. But I think they're just now coming to understand how they're going to grow it, right? So, it starts with these four games on other platforms, right? And then the PC audience, obviously, it's so funny that Game Pass is available on PC and everybody still buys their games on Steam, right? So, and they know that, right? They know PC players will buy their games because they're so obsessed with keeping their Steam libraries intact.
Yeah, I'd also like to note, Chris was replying to some people in the comments here. Someone pointed out, they were like, Microsoft has shifted towards Game Pass and PC and xCloud. I was not an Xbox user beforehand. Now I am. Same with PlayStation re-releasing games on Epic Games Store and Steam. The consoles were always delivery method to get content to consumers. Hardware is never profitable. And that is correct. Hardware is rarely profitable until years and years into the generation. That's why Sony is saying, like, because PlayStation is so critical to Sony as a whole, whereas Xbox is a big part of Microsoft, but Windows is 100% their bigger driver. Their tech investments and things like that. I think Xbox was like third or fourth on their most profitable things. And like, still then it's services and whatnot.
Yeah. Like, I mean, Microsoft is a services company. They always have been. But right?
Like, you look at Sony, earlier this week said, like, they'd only anticipate being able to do a PS5 price drop because they simply can't afford to.
Well, they raised the prices in every region except here.
To be fair, Xbox did raise their prices in a lot of other regions and then they slashed prices in the US.
Yeah.
So, I guess, kind of want it to be a little bit more affordable where like your primary audience is. But yeah, he was replying to that and like people were like, why aren't you talking about Nintendo? Why aren't you talking about Nintendo? And he's like, Nintendo is such an enigma that you can't include them in those because two different generations, they've had a console that's just like wildly disproportionately affected everything.
Yeah. And they haven't
the Switch.
And they haven't lost money on a console launch since the GameCube. So
I mean, that's even with the drastic underperformance of the Wii U, which,
yeah, and
like, you want to talk about a console underperforming, like, sorry, Xbox One was bad. The Wii U was a catastrophe.
Yeah.
Like, love that. It may not have had the bad press, but we walked around for like 5 years going, LOL Wii U. Like it was at a point where like the 3DS was the better investment for your money. Like just straight up.
Yeah, like, and even that, even 3DS sold less than half of the DS, right?
Yeah, I mean, God, the DS was such an enigma. But, like, I think that's, like, one of the funny things. Like, Nintendo's laughing all the way to the bank because all of us made jokes about the Wii U, and then we bought every re-release. So, they had the last laugh in the end, but it's like,
yeah,
even so, like, I, you know, and I know a lot of forecasters are like, I don't know if the Switch 2 is going to do the same incredible numbers as Switch 1, because Switch 1, for a lot of adults, I think, especially being people our age, you know, mm-hmm. who maybe had drifted away from Nintendo like I did, this was like our grand coming home to Nintendo thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was the perfect age. I was, God, when did the Switch to 2017?
Yep.
Yeah, God, 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was 25, almost 26.
Yeah.
Like, I was kind of the perfect age. It was nostalgia bait for me and this and that. Like, all I have ever played is Nintendo exclusives on it.
Mm-hmm. They hit, it was a perfect storm, right? Of, and this, and not to make this about Nintendo, but just for a minute here. It was a perfect storm for Nintendo where they had a console that failed. Let's be honest. The Wii U failed.
100%.
But what they did was they merged their two markets into one hybrid console, right? They had a steady cadence of new games, re-releases, and remasters throughout the first 18 months. A lot of nostalgia for people who hadn't played Nintendo in a while. They launched with Breath of the Wild. They, you know, the Vita audience was looking for a new handheld to play their indies on, which grew more towards the latter half of that first year and probably more into year two. Like, Nintendo just hit a perfect storm with the Switch, and I think that's why it's been so accessible to people to pick up and buy and play a couple games on, because,
yeah,
you know, it was a perfect storm for Nintendo, and I think the next console is going to be great for Nintendo. It's not going to do as well as the Switch. It's just not.
No, and I mean, like, it's just like with the Wii. Like, people were so shocked at the whiplash from the Wii being one of the greatest selling consoles of all time to the Wii U being the worst selling modern console. Mm-hmm. And it was like, well, most of us got tired of the Wii's gimmick about 2 or 3 years in. The Switch, right about the time I think you would have gotten tired of that, the pandemic is low-key the greatest thing that could have ever happened in Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
Because Animal Crossing, I don't think, gets the attention it does without that happening. Without being the game of quarantine.
Right.
You know, we saw a bunch of games kind of take off that we don't think we would have otherwise. Like, Fall Guys has gone through this cycle. Phasmophobia went through a cycle. Animal Crossing was the biggest thing in the world for, like, 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
So big that it was bigger than Final Fantasy VII Remake. It was bigger than Persona 5 Royale when it came out. Like,
it's their second highest selling game at 44 million units,
which is insane, because like 35 of that came in the first like 9 months.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely ludicrous.
Mario Kart's
such an enigma. I don't understand
61 million units.
I don't fucking understand that. I'm so tired of Mario Kart 8.
On top of the 8.5 million that it sold on the Wii U.
It has just... Mario Kart's always had an insane attach rate, because, I mean, like, Mario Kart Wii was the best-selling Wii game, too. I think the DS one was, like, one of the best-selling DS games that wasn't a Pokemon game.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, like, that... Mario Kart and New Super Mario Brothers are just inevitable on every console, I feel. But to, like, kind of get back to the Xbox of it all and, like, wrap it up, like, I do think that, like, a push into handheld and, like, having that as, like, your not premium console, but, like, your portable one that's probably like $600, and then you have a premium home console. And I mean, home consoles are going to get more expensive. Gaming is an expensive hobby, but if you want to keep pace with like what PCs can do, I expect a home console to cost probably around the same amount, probably about $600 for the next generation. But they can sit there and promote and be like, well, for the price of a PC, you can get a home console and you can get the portable one.
Mm-hmm.
And they're almost certainly going to do a bundle that makes it cheaper.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see where they go. I want to see what announcements they make in June, because they're already starting to push this summer showcase, and I really want to see what they talk about with the hardware. February. Yeah, I want to see what they talk about with the hardware. I want to see the games that we haven't seen in a few years. You know, obviously as we get closer to it, we get into like May, we'll do some predictions and whatnot. But I think that this is the ultimate, like you said in the title, like this could have been an email, but I do think it's good for the folks who don't follow the industry like we do, who just see like the Twitter buzz, mm-hmm. or who just see like the meltdowns on Reddit, to understand what is actually happening here. And it's nothing incredible right now. Like, this is still a big move for a company to come out and say this, but this is just keeping in line with what Microsoft has been doing for years.
Mm-hmm.
Except instead of doing it with Steam, which everybody had the meltdown when it was, when it came to like the Windows Store, it was like, okay, fine. When it came to Steam, they're like, whoa, what the fuck? And like, then they started seeing the Steam numbers and they were like, oh shit. Mm-hmm. But even that, I really hate when people share Steam charts and are like, oh, well, yeah, Halo Infinite only has 10,000 players. Like, yeah, because they're playing it through fucking Xbox. It's Halo. It's free to play.
Yeah.
Anyways, Corey, why don't you get us out of here if we don't have anything else to talk about?
Yeah, I don't really have anything else. I'm excited that Xbox is going to operate as usual, I guess.
Yeah. I'm interested to see where we go from here.
Yeah. I'm excited for the summer showcase, because how much more could they have to talk about, like announce that's not announced?
I have no idea. I hope please have the Elite Controller Mark III.
Yeah. No rubber grips, please.
Please have better build quality. Thank you.
Yeah. Speaking of better build quality, thank you everybody for accepting our delayed episode. You can catch us every other Tuesday, usually on podcast services and on YouTube. Josh, thank you for your time tonight.
We'll eventually get back to a normal schedule.
Yeah. Josh, thanks for your extra time tonight.
Yes, absolutely.
For those unaware, we recorded Tower Casuals before this, which is why my voice throat is
bone dry.
Yeah. Where can we find you, Josh?
Twitter at Josh_Finn, 2 N's. I'm pushing the Luka Doncic for MVP candidacy.
You can find me at I am Corey and HC on Twitter and Instagram. You can check out our sister show, Tower Casuals. If you're a Destiny fan, subscribe, share, rate, review wherever you listen or watch. Thanks so much for watching, and until next time, we love you. Goodbye.